everyone. This is Senator Jacob Javits with another of my periodic reports to the people of the state of New York. Before we get to questions and answers, I'd like to discuss a few of the highlights which have taken place in the past week. Of course, the energy crisis is on everyone's mind. Governor Rockefeller, Mayor of New York, Mayor Lindsay, and other officials have now installed lower speed limits on our roads, 50 miles an hour. I hope very much citizens will cooperate. It's in the highest interest of the nation. Now, we don't have to get too concerned, though we should be deeply concerned, about the energy crisis as it affects the United States. It's much less than the way it will affect European countries if the radical Arab states really go through with their threat to gradually put the squeeze on them as to oil. We lose roughly in the United States somewhere between 6-7% and perhaps 10-15% of our oil. But let us remember that in this country we are far less dependent than the 80% of Europe or the 90% of Japan. Now, conservation measures, and we're putting through a law on that very promptly, will materially help us with that, and every citizen should cooperate. Also, there'll be conversions from oil to coal, or an effort like in Buffalo, where there are a good many schools that are not going to convert from coal to oil, though they were going to under previous plans. Finally, we must all accept a slight diminution in the heating of our homes, and we may have local pinches. For example, in the Northeast U.S., we are very unhappy with the fact that Canada has cut down on oil exports to the United States. And only in this past week, I have asked the Secretary of State to undertake negotiations with the Canadian government in order to help with that situation. On one other major matter, which is the presidential crisis as it affects President Nixon's concern with Watergate, I believe that the efforts I have made and many others are making for a special prosecutor appointed by the courts is a very important one in order to divorce that from any such possibility as came when the president fired the other special prosecutor, Mr. Cox, and also our insistence that everything must be revealed and that prosecution of anyone, up to the president, must take place for what has been a deeply immoral act as far as the United States is concerned. Finally, just one word on the Middle East crisis. That seems underway, but again, no euphoria, either for a restoration of oil deliveries or for peace. The United States is going to have to keep a very strong hand there to be sure that the Soviet Union doesn't stand astride of the fate of the whole world by controlling that particular crossroads and that particular source of indispensable energy. Now we have our questions. I'd like to introduce our inquiring reporter today is Mike Waldman, distinguished Washington correspondent for Newsday, the great Long Island newspaper. And now here's Mr. Waldman.
Senator, do you think right now there's enough of evidence that we know about so that President Nixon should or would be impeached by the House?
I believe that the evidence up to this minute would not, one couldn't say that the House would be unjustified in bringing in a bill of impeachment. But I do not believe that it is conclusive enough, even on Watergate, because so much remains in the hands of Judge Sirica and the grand jury, so that I would feel that the evidence measures up to an impeachment. But I am deeply anxious that the House continue, and that because there'll be more revelations, and the total may very well add up to that kind of a case. But if a bill of impeachment was brought up now, I think the country and the Senate is ready to face the issue of trial.
Well, if the president isn't impeached, Senator, and if he doesn't resign, what sort of an administration can the people look forward to for the next 3 years? What would happen? Would there be any strong programs coming out of the White House?
Well, interestingly enough, Mike, I think that in foreign policy, the president would have a pretty free hand. He's done very well in that, as even evidenced by the most recent ceasefire on the Middle East. I think the people have a certain confidence in the fact that he's good at that, and especially with the brilliant performance of Dr. Henry Kissinger, the new Secretary of State. In domestic policy, I think he would suffer, But then in domestic policy, he's not given to such great initiatives anyhow. It's been more a hard-headed pursuit of the balanced budget or close to balanced budget, and the money equation has been ever present in the situation. So really, though I don't think he could govern with the brilliance and initiative that perhaps other presidents have, I think he probably can come through to the end without a major prejudice to the government of the United States. Now, this is quite apart from the moral issues, and the moral issues are critically important to the future of this country.
Do you think that Gerry Ford is going to make a good vice president? You didn't get along very well with our previous vice president, Spiro Agnew. You think you'll be able to get along with him a little better?
Well, I know Gerry very well, and I think I can get along with him splendidly. Up to now, he has been a very honorable, open-faced, straightforward, decent American, not given to brilliant initiatives either. Or to a very enterprising approach to public affairs. But high office does something to a man, and Gerry is a lively, honorable man, and he may very well electrify us all. But I certainly can get along with him great and have no such problems as I had with Spiro Agnew.
Do you think he'd be a better president than Richard Nixon?
I would not say that. I think that in the field of foreign policy, Richard Nixon has unique qualifications. I think in the field of domestic policy, there's much lacking, and he and I have had our lumps on that. And I think that these moral issues in Watergate have very, very seriously overshadowed his presidency. But to give you a qualitative judgment on a totally new man in this kind of an office, I wouldn't undertake to do.
The Republican Coordinating Committee has been newly revitalized. Do you think they're taking over the total titular leadership of the Republican Party away from the president in matters other than Watergate? Do you think they should do that?
Well, I don't believe that they are taking it over, but I believe they're a very desirable development. The coordinating committee is composed of ex-candidates, the so-called party leadership in the House and Senate, some governors, etc. I think it's very important to show that the party has a personality, quite apart from the president, because the president's Watergate troubles, if it was lumped in with party leadership and the president being the party, could very seriously prejudice the party, and the party doesn't deserve it, because really this is a unique situation in which the party was absolutely out of Watergate. It was just these, I don't use that word insultingly, amateurs in the White House who had some amazing and strange sense of values that it was more important to elect the President of the United States than to obey the criminal laws of the country.
Do you think the Coordinating Committee is going to help with the elections next year? Do you think it's going to save Republicans? People keep talking about just a complete wipeout of Republican candidates.
I believe Republicans will save themselves. I believe the people will be discerning and that they'll take Republicans for what they are on their total record and their total ability and their stand. Naturally, on honesty in government. There's no question about that being a factor. But I do believe that it's essential for the coordinating committee, if that's the committee chosen for the job, and apparently it seems to be a natural one, not necessarily the only idea, very important to give the party its own personality, its own character, and to sharpen in the minds of the people the fact that the derelictions of Watergate were derelictions of individual White House staff and other officials, and we're not the Republican Party or its officials. I think that can be very helpful, though I do not believe it's going to be decisive. Nor do I believe that that Republicans are going to be punished for Watergate. But I do think that the public will be sharpened and will want to know let us say they want to know more about an individual Republican candidate than normally they do because of their awareness that it's this administration which got in this Watergate trouble.
How are you going to handle that, Senator, in your campaign?
I'm going to handle it as I always have. I've always been my own man. I've always been New York Senator, ready to stand on its record and ready to stand not only on the record of the past, but on my abilities in the present and my capabilities for the future. It's a very extensive record. I certainly can be judged based on what I promised and what I performed. My integrity, I leave that to the people. I don't think I'll suffer anything from Watergate at all, but I'll certainly meet any issue of that character which is raised.
When the president speaks now, people talk about his lack of credibility. When he speaks to you, do you believe him? Do you believe in his credibility?
Well, that would be most insulting to say that one didn't believe the President of the United States, but one certainly has a haunting feeling in the back of one's mind that he has miscalculated, been misinformed, hired some, you know, good many people who shouldn't have been hired, and so on. So naturally, you evaluate your estimate of the President's estimate on that basis. In the commonplace matter of believing him as a man, of course, he's the President of the United States, and he's a long-standing public figure in the United States, and I wouldn't for a moment feel that he was intentionally deceiving me. Not for a moment. I don't believe any American should. But you would evaluate, in view of his past mistakes, his estimates, his ideas, and what he said now. And I'll say this to you, because I've just had a very recent experience with him in a very long and very important consideration of the problems of Europe, in which I've had a rather consequential hand as chairman of a committee of nine, otherwise known as the Nine Wise Men of NATO, which just made a very comprehensive report. And as you know, we're in a lot of trouble with Europe. I found the president to be a very first-class expert in foreign affairs in this field, and the ability to consider the matter on a totally professional level. He spoke as the President of the United States, I spoke as the senior senator from New York, and the chairman of this committee. And we were able to transact our business for the benefit of our country in terms of its policy in the most professional and, I feel, high-level way, without any implications about credibility or any other creeping illnesses of Watergate intruding. And so I think that it's possible to govern. It's not going to be easy. It had been a lot less easy if there had not, it had been a lot less difficult if there had not been Watergate, but it can be done.
What changes does he think should be made in our NATO alliance, and do you go along with these changes?
Well, I believe that the main thing in the NATO alliance is to adjust it to from what it was, to wit, a defensive alliance against a feared or threatened Soviet aggression, naked aggression. Now it's a matter of a deprivation of freedom through Europe leaning through the Soviet Union with its tremendous weight, especially of its armament right on the borders of Europe, leaning on Europe, being in a way a secondary beneficiary of the Arab blackmail on oil against Europe, and, though it's not a pleasant word, it's a true word, Finlandizing Europe, to wit, making Europe a satrapy of the Soviet Union, and thus depriving it of its freedom, as it, in a degree, not as great as its own satellites, like Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, but to an important degree, and changing the whole balance of freedom throughout the world. Now, this is a critical danger. The United States, in my judgment, can meet it by a greater intimacy of contact with its European allies, by settling major questions of money, and by the way, we're on the road to do that, an international monetary system, and trade, by a better coordination in our defense arrangements, including nuclear defense, and by more intensive consultation respecting matters outside NATO, like those which involved us in the Middle East and those which involved us in the Southeast Asia war in Vietnam. Well, Mike, I'm afraid our time's up. Thank you very much, Mike Waldman of Newsday, for being with me on our report to the people of New York.
Thank you, Senator.
This is Senator Javits with another report to the people of the state of New York. Shortly, a very attractive and brilliant young woman who is a congressional correspondent will be asking me some questions. But first, I'd like to talk about what I consider to be the key subject for all of my constituents. With all due regard to the moral questions in Watergate, it's inflation, which is seriously affecting every family and which is a source of great worry. Now, the inflationary situation is not getting better. If anything, it's getting worse. And the rate of inflation in 1974 is estimated to be higher than it is for 1973. The remedies being applied are sort of old-time medicine, as they've been called, to wit, a restriction of credit and dealing with a money supply, high interest rates, incurring the danger of additional unemployment, and hoping that economic activity will slacken. and thereby relieve demand and relieve the inflation. That's hardly a prescription which fits America. I believe the vigor of this economy demands better remedies. And so I have gone for the following. One, I'm seeking a monitoring agency to keep an eye on wages and prices and be able to have public hearings and recommend action to the Congress and the President if they go out of line in any particular direction. Second, bearing in mind that the amount we produce is what we can consume, and that therefore the key to inflation is productivity, I'm urging a return to World War II standards when we had some 5,000 labor management public productivity committees in order to increase productivity. Fourth, I think we need a conservation program, especially with respect to gasoline and energy. We have too soon forgotten the long lines at the gas stations, and the price of gasoline demands some consumer reaction, as well as its scarcity and the difficulties of the energy producers. And in addition, I believe that we're entitled to the best advisory services that are available as to what we ought to buy and ought not to buy. This goes for food and many other things. I think with that kind of an activist program, we have a better chance to get somewhere, and I'll fight for it in the Congress in every way I can, and I've just introduced legislation to cover most of it. Now, to ask some questions today, here is Catherine Mackin, who is congressional correspondent for NBC. Cassie, fire away.
Okay. Senator, the subject of the economy interests me a great deal, just as a taxpayer and as a consumer. Why has the administration and the Congress been so paralyzed on the subject of doing something about this dreadful inflation situation?
I think, Cassie, they're hidebound by doctrinaire ideas that controls are endemically bad or spiritually bad or some other way bad, and hence they've had a stop-and-go practice on them. You've had freezes, price control. It's come on and off, and it's never really been wholehearted either way. I think another thing is that they're very deeply concerned about any massive thing which would worry the public or deal with austerity for the public, and this is partially attributable to the president's troubles. And you'll note that the remedies I suggested move very much in those directions.
What about this resolution that was passed the other day to have sort of a summit conference on inflation? Would that lead to anything other than more talk?
Well, good talk is okay, and making people resolved and ringing the alarm bell, as, for example, on the conservation business, respecting the use of energy and gasoline, considering the very high price of energy and the fact that we could be hit with oil shortages any day. Now, I think the kind of talk envisaged by a resolution for a summit meeting of producers, consumers, business, etc., which is what was developed here by some of the newer senators, it certainly can't hurt and is completely consistent with everything I've recommended myself. One other point. It is a fact that the world's in monetary trouble and in inflation trouble, and so one would have to add to any prescription domestically, like I've outlined, the need for an international agreement on money, what shall be money rates, exchange rates, backing for the credit of the world in terms of international trade, and I'm very hopeful that that can be brought about very promptly. And in addition, we need a backup by the central banks, of which there are 10 major industrial countries with 10 major central banks, that they're not going to let any major bank fail, because there's a real erosion of confidence in instruments of credit in the world, including paper money, and that's got to get have the backing of the major industrial nations.
Did I sort of detect in what you in your introductory remarks that you perhaps thought that if controls had been strongly enforced across the board, that controls would have worked in breaking the back of inflation?
I believe so, and I believe we've taken them off too soon in view of our present situation, where you have an enormously increased demand for everything, including food, bearing in mind that the poorer people of the world have suddenly been able to do a little better on food, and that we had bad crop failures, including our problems with Russian wheat, and second, the major increase in the price of oil.
Weren't the politicians playing politics with the controls, giving some favors to some of their friends and doing in some other people?
I don't think, Cassie, there was as much of that that we know about. You know, it may have been under the surface and probably existed. You've always got to discount every public policy with the usual 10% for chiseling and dishonesty, and you're undoubtedly right about that. But I think the main point was the irresolution of the administration. It didn't like controls, but it applied them. And hence it applied them half-heartedly and played a stop-and-go game, which just didn't work.
Mm-hmm. So one last point on this, something that I know an awful lot of people personally who are concerned about. Aren't wages going to have to go up a lot because of what happened during the controls period?
Cassie, that's a very astute question, and I'll answer it with equal frankness, if I may. It's very hard to bring down a price level. And I would be deceiving my people if I told them, well, you're going to get big price abatements in one thing or another. You may get reductions. You undoubtedly will. We've already seen some in meat, etc. And that's attributable to the discipline of the consumer, which is exactly what I'm talking about. But mainly, we need now a time of stability for the economy to catch up and for wages and salaries to reach the levels which will accommodate the increased number of dollars that it takes to buy what ought to be an honorable and decent American standard of living. And that adjustment needs time. Obviously, if you're going to leapfrog, in other words, if prices go up, then wages go up, then prices go up, you never can catch up. And the working man is always going to be behind the eight ball. So our policy must be to get a time of stability so that the whole economy may readjust to the higher number of dollars level.
Yes. Senator, what about, how is inflation affecting President Nixon's welfare in this whole impeachment proceedings? Is inflation sort of keeping people dissatisfied and keeping the heat on?
I think that, but I do think so. I think that inflation just indicates that people are unhappy with government. And they're absolutely right for the reasons we've just been discussing. And that's a big problem for President Nixon. But I really think that Watergate is deeper than that, using the word to cover all the charges, etc. And I'd really believe that we have a national resolution, that we're going to clean up our situation, that the kind of immorality and slackness which we've seen, and they're probably epitomized best by the transcripts, has simply got to go, and that such campaign practices, including campaign financing, which engenders them, has got to be radically reformed. And I'm all with that. Now, I'm going to be one of 100 judges if the president is impeached. And this doesn't mean that whatever may be the evidence, I'm not going to call it as I see it. But it simply means the whole system, including campaign and campaign expenditure reform, and the fact that these issues have to be tried and that the president has to deliver every shred of evidence. Supreme Court's absolutely right to have made him give up all those tapes, and that we've simply got to go through to the end and administer punishment wherever it belongs, no matter how eminent the person who's being charged, including the president.
Are we entering into a period when delivering, the actual delivery of the tapes, is going to delay the impeachment proceedings once again?
It doesn't look that way, because the tapes are being delivered in a criminal proceeding. And what comes out in that criminal proceeding goes through two screenings. One, whatever the judge now determines is not national security, because he's going to hear all the tapes. Second screening, whatever is admissible in evidence in the criminal trial. And third point, of course, is the length of the criminal trial. And I don't believe that that's going to be delayed for that. I believe the committee will act on the assumption that the urgent need of the country for a resolution of this matter is so great that they simply cannot wait on that cumulative evidence which may be in the tapes.
On the other hand, the trial's not supposed to begin until the 9th of September, and while the committee can act, can the full House act without those tapes?
I think it will. I believe that there comes a time in every matter of human activity when you simply have to act on what you have, and I believe that they've got enough so that they can act one way or the other.
How about the Senate? Is the Senate going to want those tapes?
Now, the Senate will, and I believe by then the Senate will have them if there is impeachment. And they will be a useful, I wouldn't say decisive, I don't know what's in them. But they will be a useful additional item of evidence. And bears upon your question, will it delay impeachment proceedings? The House can legitimately say that whatever is the evidence in those tapes will be available for a trial. The House could say, we have enough now to impeach. Or it could say, we don't. In which case, it might even go over to the next Congress as far as they're concerned, because that is possible. In other words, this House may not impeach, the next House may, or may not either. But in any case, there is a second string to their bow, in the sense that if there is evidence, confirmatory or going the other way in these tapes, that it is adequate to have that for the trial, and that the House doesn't need it to make up its mind about the indictment, to wit,
the impeachment.
Mm-hmm. How is all of this affecting the course of government and the mood of the country? Is impeachment really just becoming so much in center stage that virtually everything else is grinding to a halt?
It's not grinding to a halt, Cassie. Lots of business is being done, but I think new initiatives, anything bold, anything that takes real leadership, like I'm talking about conservation of gasoline and energy, and when you deal with things like that, monumental thing, productivity, requiring presidential leadership, that's where we're being hurt. And the other thing is that I've been abroad recently, and I've been to the major new governments, Britain, France, Germany, Israel. And I find that Europe, I'm leaving out Israel because that has separate problems, but I find that Europe is now being affected by the impeachment problem in the sense that it feels that American policy cannot be bold, cannot do anything really creative, and that it's bound to be stopped until this question is decided. And the answer to that, of course, is celerity by the House and then celerity by the Senate, if it comes to that.
Mm-hmm. Some time ago, there was talk that if the House did impeach the president, or at any event, when the impeachment proceedings had gone to a certain point, that Republican leaders would get together and go down to the White House and tell the president that it was time to resign because of concern for the national welfare. Is there any such talk like that afoot again?
No, I haven't heard it, Cassie, but that doesn't mean it won't happen. And I believe that if there is impeachment, you will face a new atmosphere by the president, by the Congress, by the leaders of the Republican Party, etc. Now, the president seems determined not to resign, and indeed he has tied non-resignation to his allegation of innocence, saying to us, for example, if you ask me to resign, you find me guilty. But we may be looking, I'm speculating, just as you are, at a totally different world in the next several weeks toward the end of August when it's expected the House will act.
So and resignation still is possible?
It is there, let's say, in the offing or in the arras, as Shakespeare said. Well, Cassie, thank you very much for being with us on a report to the people of the state. And I'm so glad our people can see the kind of acumen which our good-looking girl reporters have. Thank you very much.